Angela Dennis and Amelia Dennis. And the title of the presentation is Bringing It Together, Implementing Community-Based Calpen Language Revitalization Research.
The Nanso Tia, Edosi Usha, Tolsi Tondi Dene de Otsi, Saskia Esta Tsehi, Lebonotina de Otsi Tsini. My name is Judy Thompson. My Telta name is Edosi, which means someone who raises up pets and children. My clan is Crow and my crest is Frog. I was born and raised in Prince Rupert on Tsimshian territory. My grandparents are Ayukta and Ka Shog, Julia and Charlie Colbreth. My mother is Catherine Thompson, and my mother and my grandparents were both, all three of them were raised in Telegraph Creek, and my father was from the Gitsan Nation. I'm a college professor at Northwest Community College, but I'm on a partial leave. I've been working as a Teletown Language and Cultural Lead for our nation for the last 2.5 years. Madhu.
My name is Odelia Dennis, and my traditional name is Gile, which I received from my grandfather Loveman Noel, and it's a name that was my grandmother's sister, my great-grandmother's sister, and my grandma's name is Yahya. And I grew up in Iskut, BC. You will be seeing a map of our territory later. Madhu.
Tēnā kōtia, Madhu, dagasu dethidli, di kanaka maoli hotine dahnene, di ta'e due, di ele choke. Kadidze hof on, lan corneli. Soga dahona on, John Plathid Dehi. Medu, good day, thank you, we honor you, the Kana Aka Maoli people. Your island in the middle of the ocean is very beautiful. You have a beautiful land. Thank you for having us on your land. Angela Dennis Ushia, Yidenek e, thus lehja Ushia. E thathke, e guta Dennis Lezi, ke, Ushia. My name is Angela Dennis. My Aboriginal name is thus lehja, which are the little black bugs on the snow. I know some of you don't have snow, so. The most of them, the little black bugs on the snow that comes out usually when it warms up in the early spring. Medu.
So we thought we would first of all just show a map to show you where our territory is in conjunction with the Hawaiian Islands. So Hawaii is way down here where we are. And this is where our territory is, way up in northern British Columbia. And here's a map of British Columbia showing all the different languages that are in our province, which there are numerous ones. So we developed a language plan, and where this began was when I started doing my dissertation back in 2005 or 2006, I started my work. And when I first started my research, I wanted to learn from my elders and from a lot of different people in our nation who have a lot of knowledge about our culture and our ways of being, ways of knowing. And as I started interviewing different Teletown elders, what they said to me, and a lot of our teachers and our language fluent speakers, what they said to me is it's really important for us to be focusing on our language. So after I'd started my research, I had to change my research questions, and they actually went through three changes, and I finally was able to focus on three questions. And what they were, how can Teletown language revitalization positively affect the lives of my people? And more in keeping with what we're talking about today, the final two questions, in the past and present, what has been done to maintain, preserve, and revitalize our Teletown language? And then the third question is, and in the future, what do my people need to do to continue to maintain, preserve, and revitalize our Tahltan language? So I defended my dissertation back in 2012. And after that, I was asked by some of our leaders to take the lead on the Tahltan language and culture portfolio. And so it was really wonderful because all of the work, all of the things I had learned from our people, from other indigenous scholars, I was able to put into this this framework. And here's a copy of the book here. But as well, there's a link up there if you want to see it online. Sorry. And the way it was organized was into four areas: governance, language programs, documentation, and then training and professional development. So in terms of governance, one of the first things that we needed to do was to develop a body that could make decisions about and guide our work in language revitalization. And so we had our first meeting of our Tahltan Language and Culture Council, I think it was back in May 2014, but it took a few years to get it off the ground. And what we called it was Dahlaga no Deside, which means, I believe, getting our talk back, Angela, is that right? And so we just had a meeting just last month, and here's just a few of the roles and responsibilities of our council. To provide guidance and promotion of the Tahltan language, provide guidance in the creation of short and long-term language plans, as well serve as a decision-making body for language and cultural revitalization. And in these pictures here, what we were doing, we were working on new vocabulary. Then the next area that we focused on was language programming. And so what we did was sort of organized in terms of age. So we looked at children and youth, and then adults, and then the third one would be just all ages. So in terms of children and youth, we were looking at first at language nests, looking at the age group of 0 to 5 years. And so we focused a lot on language nests, and that's what Odelia will talk a bit more about in the second half of our presentations. And then we also looked at children and youth in terms of the children that are of school age, so from K to 12. And our Tahltan language is taught in all three of our schools, but it's not an accredited subject, so it's not accredited by the BC Ministry of Education, so students can't get credit for it. And as well, we don't have a framework where our teachers can follow. And so we need to be looking at developing that, and we've just started that process right now. And we're actually building on the work of one of our school educators, Louise Framst, who actually happens to be in the audience today, one of my Tahltan elders. And she worked with David Rattray back in the late 1990s on getting a language integrated resource package off the ground. And so we're building on her work. And then in terms of parents and adults, and Odelia will mention this briefly as well, we're looking at doing sessions, and we've started already, doing sessions for parents who have children in our language nests. And we also, one thing we'd like to do as well is look at having language sessions in all communities outside of our three communities in our territory, so where they can work together and learn the language. And then we have the Master Apprentice Program, and you can see in the picture, Odelia's in the picture with Angela, and the woman in the middle is Regina Louie. And in the other picture, we have Pauline Hawkins with her parents, Pat and Edith Carlick. And so the Master Apprentice Program is basically where you have a learner working with a fluent speaker, and they work together for a minimum of 10 hours a week over a three-year period. And you can get funding in British Columbia through the First Peoples Cultural Council for that work. And then moving on to documentation, this is a third area. And so we looked at old recordings and also new recordings. So in terms of old recordings, we have a lot of, there was a land claim studies done in the 1980s, and so there's a lot of Tahltan knowledge and information there and wisdom that we can learn from and look at developing language resources from that. We also received funding from the University of British Columbia to digitize our audio tapes. And in terms of new recordings, we're continuing to work with our fluent speakers. Now, in terms of language learning materials, I'm working on a postdoctoral fellowship with SFU through their SHRC partnership grant. And so that's working on learning materials and apps. As well, there's a website there, ddenike.com, which was put together by one of our people, Oscar Dennis. And we're working on children's books, and that's funded by Success by Six. So I'll just quickly show you some of the artwork that some of our Teltan artists have developed. So we've got the children's book up top, and Angela will talk about that. And then we also are working on alphabet books. So Angela and Odelia and Regina worked on the letters, and then picking the words, and then creating a sentence for that. And then we have Teltan Thomas, which I think you will all enjoy. I'll introduce you to him right now. Oh, is the sound on? Screened at the University of Hawaii on Wednesday, February 25th, called Datsia Keke, and it's about our grandfather's footprints. And it was directed by Michael Borgwin, and he's one of the stars as well. And Angela worked on that work as transcribing all of the English into Teltan, and it was dubbed in Teltan. So there's a website there you can go to find out more information about it. And then the last area is training and professional development. So with the University of Victoria, I've been working with them to bring a Bachelor of Education to Dease Lake. And so the first 2 years is a diploma in which people can build on their proficiency. And then the final few years would be where they would actually get their Bachelor of Education. They would get certified as a teacher. And with UVic as well, we have two students who are in the master's program in Indigenous Language Revitalization. And one of them is Odelia Dennis, and another one is my sister Julie Morris. And then networking. This is where, you know, we're going to conferences or working together. We just had a workshop in Deep Terrace with all of our Teltan teachers. And then, of course, being in Hawaii, that's a nice place to network. So I'm going to pass it over to Angela now. She's going to share with you some things.
I'm one of the fluent speakers of our language. We have three communities in the Teltan territory. And the place where I'm from is Huachon. So Huachon Hotaltan Jastet. We are a matrilineal clan of the Diné language group. Of the three communities, we have at least 22 speakers, 12 of whom are elderly people. I've been working with the language from a very young age. At that time, we didn't have an orthography that we were aware of, but done the best that I can without that and recorded and sometimes had to write phonetically as best as I can do to document the stories and historical facts from the elders, and I had to write the best that I can do with phonetically when the batteries died in my tape recorder, my tape deck. My first job was to record stories and historical facts from the old elders who are now our ancestors in the spirit world. Our language was a way of life in our home, being raised by my grandparents as well as my mother and my aunt, whom were all very traditional people. Today I cherish the many teachings that I was fortunate enough to have had and back then live in our way of life on the land and at home. Our language and culture was a guide for our way of life being given to each and every one of us by Ahdigidinatia. I have assisted in numerous projects regarding our language, including children's dictionary, the one that maybe Judy spoke a little bit about, conversational and audio booklets,
and an audio and a booklet of the Iskut-Tahltan elders' stories. We are currently working on a book that Judy just showed, How Our Fish Came to Be. I've done that with, that was one of the recordings of the late, late elders, my paternal grandmother, Emma Brown, who I had visit and had copious amounts of tea each and every day just to get some stories out of her. And I really cherish that moment that I've had with her. I've also done a lot of transcribing work for from English to Tahltan for ministries of families and children. The most recent one was a beautiful documentary called Datsia Keke, which Judy talked about a little bit on there, depicting an elder and his grandsons immersed in a traditional way of life. In 1988, I was hired to work with an older lady whom we showed on there, Regina Luby. We taught together until she decided to retire in 2003, and now I'm currently working with kindergarten to grade 7. I use a TPR method and in an immersion style when I teach the language to our children. We are focused on staying in the language only and exposing to the students to a variety of verbal and action words and everyday of life, like put your coat on, go to bed. No, I don't necessarily say that to them at that same time. And after a while, the students become comfortable with the language and are able to demonstrate comprehension without necessarily having to speak until they feel that they're comfortable enough to do so. Because a lot of the children that I teach today do come from non-speaking families. And a lot of them, most of their elderly grandparents have passed on. And that's some of the work that I do. And I feel that that's a natural way of learning a language is first to understand it, because that was how we grew up. My brother and I are fluent speakers of the language, and we are both the youngest fluent speakers. And we're not very young at that. And today we have about 4 or 5 people who are learning the language, and Odelia is one of them. They are beginning speakers, and they have their heart in it to do it, and that I'm happy to see, because at the beginning, it was only me. It was always only me. And then ending up with the lady who retired from me, then it was me again. And there's no way one person can do all of that. So I really appreciate the fact that we started a language revitalization with our community and in our nation, thanks to Judy. And during the teaching of the children, I also used games to reinforce what they learn. I taught them through traditional stories and songs. There's one song that the kids just totally loved, and they always ask for it all the time. That's our Nostal song, that's our lynx song, and how the lynx go and hunt on the land for its food. And with the older students, I covered lots of oral histories, some stories, rites of passage, and during the fall and spring, we go harvesting medicinal plants. And we're planning now to focus on songs and dances and regalia. I'm hoping that the parents will start joining their children in the school and also try to learn some of the language and some of the culture. So we also started a grade K-12 curriculum guide, which I'm really, really thankful for, because sometimes it's hard to just, you know, having to go like how I did for many years, having to do things on my own. Now I can open up a curriculum guide and it will help me. So with closing, I would like to say, if it takes a community to raise a child, it takes a community to come together to nurture a declining and endangered language back to a healthy state of being, and that's what I hope for. Thank you. Medu.
Okay, so I did plan on talking a bit more about the languageness, but it seems we're out of time, so I will just forward to some pictures of the languageness. And also talk about the immersion setting. The children are becoming accustomed to the immersion setting where they can't speak English. And these are the people that I work with at the two language nests. So we have two language nests, Zimis Cho'o in Iskut. That's the first one that opened in May 2014. And then we have Kaspa'a To, which is the one that we opened in Dease Lake, and that happened in December 2014. So that is a fairly new one. And so we, in order for the older children and the parents and the younger children to be more comfortable in the immersion setting, we use body language gestures, we sing songs to them, and I believe this is one of the songs that we sing. So this is a song that we sing during snack time, and I do have one more short video. In the language nest in Dease Lake, we read simple books to the children, and they really enjoy acting out what's happening in the book. And we have one book that they really like, and it's about opposites. So for instance, big, small, and slow, fast, and up there, underneath, and happy and sad. And so that's what this video is about. And so in closing about the language nest, in addition to the children learning the language, we have a parents learning session once or twice per week. And I realize it's not enough to gain a significantly high proficiency in a short amount of time, unlike, it's not like the MAP program where you spend 100 hours with an elder, but this teaches the pair, or shows the parents what language we use with their children. And we also have parent luncheons where the parents get to come in and have lunch with everyone while they observe us interacting with their children. So I think that that was a really good way of exposing the parents as well to the language. So in conclusion, everyone learns from the language, and to me, this is action-oriented, and we are progressing towards our goal of language revitalization. And we still have many improvements to make along the way, and I really feel that's already happening by attending conferences like these, and also the upcoming training that Judy spoke about. And we will find ways to improve the language nest programs for the children and the parents. Mandu. Yes, we have quite a lot of puppets in both programs, but I hadn't really thought of trying to explain to the children, because sometimes with the games we have to explain to them in English first what is happening to prepare them for the immersion, but that's the only time that we break into English. And I hadn't thought of asking the children to speak the language with their puppet. So initially, what I was doing was using the puppets to speak to them in the language and ask them questions. But I think that is a really good idea, and we will try that. other questions, comments? Yes?
You say as you teach language, who taught you how to teach the language in the classroom? Do you have like a language center, or are you just working it by yourself?
No, actually, some of the training, and I didn't actually get a chance to talk about the program that I'm in at the University of Victoria. And the program is called Masters in Indigenous Language Revitalization. And it's a very excellent program that focuses on revitalizing the language rather than going to linguistics or anything, or the study of the language. And so I've learned some techniques from this program, as well just being in the language nest and seeing what the children like. And one of our new caretakers, Patricia Louis, she has her certificate in early childhood education, so she has been a real asset to our program. And so she helps me a lot with what activities to do, what to run along with the things that the children enjoy. And so that has helped. But as for formal teaching, I don't have any formal training in teaching, except for trying to teach the adults, and that's it.
I just wanted to add to that. The way the language nest is set up is like it's a home environment, so it's not preschool, it's not daycare, it's not Head Start. And so it's like going to grandma's house. So Odelia is a mother of two, so she taught her children how to speak English, and now she's working with fluent speakers, doing everyday activities, going for walks, just putting babies down for naps, changing diapers, just doing everyday things that you would do with a child before they go to school. So that's how we're trying to approach that. Yes.
Reflective of the curriculum that you're using in the language nest?
Yes, it is. Actually, we don't have a curriculum for the language nest yet. We're hoping to develop something because some of our attendees are about 4 and 5 years old, so we need to begin thinking about getting them prepared for preschool, right? So we don't have a curriculum, but the language that I teach in the parent sessions are everyday language that the parent will speak to their child. So for instance, the conversations between the caretaker or the grandmother, the grandfather, and the child, because most times the fluent speaker is their grandchildren that are attending the language nest. And so it's basic conversation of taking care of a child, and that's what we're aiming to teach the parents so that they could use the language with their children at home. So in essence, we're trying to bring the language into the home of the parents, because that is very important for the intergenerational transmission from the parent to the child, as well as from us to the child.
Yes? Oh. Aliki?
Thanks, Odelia. Great presentation, you guys. I was just wondering, and maybe you mentioned this, but how many hours a day is it that the babies are in the language nest?
For ISKCUT, it's 16 hours per week, and for the DSL language nest, it's 12 hours per week. So right now, we're operating 3 days a week in ISKCUT and 2 days per week in DSL. But it's only while I'm away. We've actually recently increased to 3 days a week in DSLEG, and once Patricia is able to coordinate the ISKCUT language nest, then both language nests will be full time, so 5 days per week. So the hours are going to be increasing.
We have time for one more question.
I may. I also applaud your efforts. I just wanted to recommend that perhaps you touch base with EACpeople.com. If you're not familiar with the EAC in Alaska, more than 5 years ago, their last fluent speaker died. And what do you do when your last fluent speaker is gone? Well, they didn't give up. 5 years later, they're ready to be prepared to make history. In 2014, they have a website and an online dictionary that you can utilize as a resource. I also wanted to ask if you had spent any time in documenting place names of your families, because ultimately what I would love to see as an Indigenous person is a map of the world and the names of what we called them before they were called anything else. Again, the recordings that you talked about, past and present, are really, really important. We should have a recording going on right now in this room to document every comment that comes through, and it should be archived with every part of what we're doing. If we don't do it at this conference, we need to aim to do that at the next one, and also there should be video equipment. This is one of the last fluent speakers of the Tlingit Nation. We have 200 left. We're not going to give up. And she is my sole inspiration for continued learning. Thank you all for your time.
Thank you so much for that. In terms of place names, there's been some work done on that, but we need to do a lot more. That's really important. And as I mentioned, the land use study that was done in the 80s, a lot of that is documented. And so all the English has been transcribed, but we need to now transcribe the Tahltan, but as well get, you know, use all of those recordings to develop learning resources and to, again, put it on a map so our people can learn the names, our names of our place, you know, places in our nation.
Can I just quickly add that all of these